Good morning, it's 7:34, and you're listening to Upfront. I'm Janine Etter. While the number of suicides in California and the Bay Area are lower than the national average, since 1999, the number of suicides throughout the United States have been increasing. In honor of Suicide Prevention Month, we speak with Christina Rita, Community Education Program Coordinator with Crisis Support Services of Alameda County, about suicide prevention. So, Christina Rita, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Sure. It's my pleasure.
Can you talk about Suicide Prevention Day and Suicide Prevention Week?
It's actually, interestingly enough, it's Suicide Prevention Month. September is, and Suicide Prevention Week comes this last week, has been that week, and World Suicide Prevention Day was the 10th. And these are days to really raise the week, the month, the day, to raise awareness about suicide. On the 10th, we also had a vigil wherever you're at by putting a candle in the window for those that we have lost to suicide, a way of honoring and acknowledging, you know, those that have been lost to suicide. It's a way of talking about, like today, being able to speak to you. It's an opportunity for those of us that work in the field to kind of get our message out a little bit more. And so it does bring the attention to it in the community.
So what are the basic demographics of people who are committing suicide?
It's a complicated question. What I can tell you is that we have in 2016, which is the year that we have the most data for, the most recent data for, we're always a couple of years behind, nationwide, 44,965 people died by suicide. Most of those were males. 34,727 were males. Females, it's 10,238. Okay, so that's a large group. It's the 10th overall cause of death, suicide is, in the United States. For adolescents, it's second. We lost 5,723 adolescents to suicide in 2016 nationwide. And the adolescents we consider 15 to 24. Are the rates going up? Yes. They're going up across the board in all age groups. So rates have been continuing to go up since 1999. All ethnic groups, all socioeconomic groups have been affected by suicide. Some groups more than others. For example, I'll give you an example of a racial group that's been, suicide rates have increased quite substantially, is in young African-American males. 5 to 12 years old. There's been a substantial increase in suicide within that particular community, within that demographic. It's something that is very concerning to those of us in suicide prevention. And the other part of that is that overall, a demographic that is increasing in suicide rates is 10 to 14 years old in all ethnic groups. So that, of course, is a big concern for us as well in suicide prevention.
And what would be the reasons for children committing suicide before the age of 14?
There's never any, even with a child, one factor for suicide. One of the things that has been talked about, there's actually two things that have been predominantly talked about. Childhood trauma at a very young age, that playing out in that 10 to 14 age range. And the other thing that they do speak to a little bit is social media and bullying. That seems to have some relation to it, but it is not the cause of suicide. There's never one cause. It's usually with most suicides, there's more than one cause. It's usually several things piling on top of each other that someone then feels so overwhelmed that they just can't go on anymore.
And social media, in what sense? Like the sense of seeing other people's lives seem happier than theirs?
Yes, yes. Part of it is that. Part of it is, you know, even for myself, I look at social media and, and I think we all do this. Oh, look at how wonderful someone's life is, right? Mine's not that good. You and I as adults know that we're only seeing a snapshot, a quick picture of a particular moment in someone's life, whereas a child, especially a young child, does not see that way. And they see their life as being wonderful and my life being terrible. So it's that not having that more broad perspective that young people don't have at that age yet.
So what are the signs that people can look for if someone may be feeling suicidal? What in particular for youth and what in particular for adults?
So when we talk about youth, we want to ask ourselves the following questions. Are they talking about wanting to die or be dead, or about suicide directly, or are they cutting or burning themselves? Self-injury, although not suicidal in nature, it actually serves a different purpose for many people. We look at cutting and burning in youth populations as being possibly predictive of suicidal thoughts and behavior. So we want to, you know, keep that in mind as we look at that. Or do they feel like things may never get better? They feel hopeless is kind of the way that we look at that. Or do they seem like they're in terrible emotional pain? Like they're overwhelmed with emotional pain, like something is wrong deep inside and they can't make it go away. Or are they struggling to deal with a significant loss in their life? Not just a death, but any significant loss. Any significant loss that can be a parent, moving, loss of friendships, all those kinds of things. The other thing that I think is always good to remember, especially when we're talking about youth and we're adults in a youth's life, or is your gut just telling you that something feels off about them? Something's not quite right. They don't seem normal to you. Maybe because they've withdrawn, or maybe it's because they seem to be more angry or anxious or on edge. So those are considered the most common youth warning signs. For adults, the warning signs are similar, very, very similar. The first one, of course, is talking about wanting to kill yourself. Looking for ways to kill yourself is another warning sign. So looking for how to purchase a gun, you know, checking train schedules, things like that. Talking about feeling hopeless or having no reason to live. Also, that unbearable pain, psychological or physical, both, could be either one, and feeling like being a burden. And I think this one is a really important one, a warning sign. When someone talks about that, I'm a burden to my family, to my loved ones, that's time that we really need to reach out to that individual and make sure that they actually are okay. Because burdensomeness, that idea that I am a burden to my friends, I'm a burden to my family, is one of the consistent things that we see in people who have died by suicide, that they've often expressed that sense of burdensomeness. Of course, being anxious, agitated, or behaving recklessly, that can also be a warning sign. This lack of sleep or sleeping all the time can also be a warning sign. Mood swings, those kinds of things can also be warning signs. And with mood swings, The thing that we always think is, oh, they're, you know, the mood swing would be they're going from being really depressed to fine or really depressed to fine. And actually, what's more concerning when we think about it is when someone has been very depressed, been very suicidal, and then all of a sudden they seem better and they seem resigned almost to living, we think. And what you observe is that they're feeling better. And you think you can let your guard down. And often what that can mean is that they've made a decision about wanting to die. And that we often hear that people will say, well, they seem so much better, and then they took their life. So when people have those mood swings, we want to be more aware of them. So those are the most common warning signs. There could be 200 more, you know, but those are the ones we look at the most often.
And what can someone do when they see their loved ones acting out some of these signs?
So we have to figure out, as people around folks, are they suicidal or not? And the only way to figure that out is to ask the question. And that is, do you want to kill yourself? Now, that's a daunting question. For most people that don't work it within the mental health field or, you know, like myself that work in suicide prevention, it seems like an easy thing to say. Just ask them, are they thinking about suicide? That should be really easy for you. It's actually really not. It's really difficult. But we encourage people to don't be afraid of asking that question. Do you want to kill yourself? You won't make someone think about suicide that has not already thought about it. You won't make someone more suicidal. In fact, research suggests it's quite the opposite, that when people ask someone who is suicidal about their suicidal feelings, they often feel better because someone has seen their pain. They've seen that they're suffering and has acknowledged it for them. They've seen them. They've heard them. And so that can be the first step in getting help and also receiving support, is asking the question. So don't be afraid to ask that question. And then the next thing to do that we suggest you do is we have to keep them safe. And what that really means is determine the extent of their suicidal thoughts. How suicidal are they? So what do we want to know at that point? How are you thinking about killing yourself? Do you have a plan on how you take your life? I know it sounds kind of like, why would I want to know all this information? But the truth is that the more information we gather, the better intervention we can make. Do they need to go to the hospital, or can we get them services here at home? How can we do that? So we ask about a plan. We ask about when are they thinking about doing this? Do they have the materials to enact their plan? So do they have a gun? Do they have the medication, whatever it is that they're planning on doing? The other important piece of that is if they do have a plan, to the best of your ability, remove the means that they're using to take their life. So if there's a gun in the home, remove the gun. Not, you don't have to get rid of it forever, but remove it from the home while the person is in a suicidal crisis. We know that if there's a gun in the home, especially around a youth, it is more likely to be used for suicide than almost anything else. So we want to make sure that, especially when someone is suicidal, that the gun is not in the home.
What if a loved one finds all this information out and the person says, yes, I actually have been thinking about killing myself, and these are the means to do it, and this is the date? What's the next step after that?
First of all, can you remove the means? That's got to be the critical piece right there, is can you remove the means? So can you remove the gun? Can you throw away the pills? Can you get rid of the rope? Can you, whatever that is that they may be talking about, include them in the decision-making about these things, especially that, you know, it's just good to include them to get their, you know, to make sure that they know what's happening and it's going to happen to them. When the suicide date is immediate, then immediate action needs to be taken. What I would suggest for most people is to call the crisis line, either the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline number, which is 1-800-273-8255, or our local crisis line number, 1-800-309-2131, and let us help you make the decision what needs to be done next. Most often, people can get into some sort of treatment. They can voluntarily go to the hospital. Family member can take them, or they can go by themselves to the hospital and get treatment. That's the ideal. If they need that kind of treatment, that's ideal. But most people don't need to go to the hospital. They just need support. So we can help build that support network. A lot of times people are already in therapy, so we can help them talk to their therapist. You know, they can go see their medical doctor. Ideally, we want to keep people out of the hospital. We want to keep them in the community. They do much better in the community. But if in order to do that, they need support from community members, so from family and friends.
And what other community services are available other than going to the hospital?
Okay, so there's the crisis line that's available. There's, of course, your doctor. You can go to see your medical doctor. A lot of times that's where this starts. I know, like at Kaiser, I can speak about Kaiser. They screen you when you come in. If you come in for things like depression, your medical doctor will give you a screening to determine where you are, and then they'll help you create those services. So a lot of it depends on what insurance you have around that. If you have, you know, different insurance, deal with it differently. I can speak to Kaiser because I have Kaiser. So you know, that kind of thing. There's our agency, our crisis line that's available. We also have services available, face-to-face counseling services available. We have groups for people that are attempt survivors, which is someone who has attempted suicide and survived it. And we also do some face-to-face counseling as well. So those are the kinds of things that you look for. You know, Alameda County Behavioral Health Care, if you're part of that system, you can call them directly and they can refer you to a therapist. For youth, if a youth is suicidal, there are some services available, but usually we suggest that you start with your medical doctor and go from there. So there are not enough services. I'll just be candid. There are not enough services for people that are suicidal. I wish we had more. And we're working on it all the time diligently to create more services for folks. But there are, you can call 211. They may also have other groups and things that are available for people that are thinking about suicide.
And are any of these programs for low to no income people?
Yes. Access, Alameda County Behavioral Healthcare Access, that can help you get onto Medi-Cal. And then you can be seen through that program. We will see people on a sliding scale, and we do not turn anyone away for an inability to pay. So we don't take insurance, but we will see you on a sliding scale. And you can talk, you know, when you come in to do when you do the intake, you would talk to the person doing the intake about that.
And can you talk about the stigma involved with the discussion of suicide? I mean, many people don't want to seek help or admit that they have a problem because of this stigma.
Yeah, and that's something that in suicide prevention we work against all the time. We fight it continually that, you know, the stigma in suicide, the silence that surrounds suicide, the idea that it's such a taboo topic that we can't talk about it. And there have been campaigns here in the Bay Area and in California to reduce that stigma. Know the Signs campaign was one of them, where there was billboards and quite a bit of publications around suicide prevention and knowing the signs and what to do and how to ask for help. So all of that takes place. Those all reduce stigma. This reduces stigma, being able to talk about it. One of the things that I've noticed, incidentally, just anecdotally in my work, is that when faith-based communities, when it comes from the pulpit, that it's okay to talk about this, it's okay to seek help about these things, that suicide rates, you know, people, I can't say rates, but what I can say is people seem to reach out for help. And reaching out for help can be, you know, you don't have to. The other thing that a lot of times people think is that in order to get help for suicide, someone suicidal, they have to go see a therapist. And a lot of people don't want to see a therapist. There's a stigma around that as well. A lot of faith communities have people there that are ready to both lay and professionals to help you with these feelings and are willing to do that. So the more that faith-based communities are willing to talk about things like suicide, the more it helps reduce the stigma. The more that you and I talk about suicide, the more it reduces the stigma. With the recent deaths of Kate Spade and Anthony Bourdain, you know, the way that the media reported, most of the media reported their suicides was extremely helpful, not harmful. They did it in such a way that, you know, it really spoke to the stigma around suicide. It brought up the conversation that even people as successful and happy as those two folks seem to be, they took their life. What does that mean for me? So it kind of broke through some of those barriers that stop us from talking about suicide. And that's always helpful. In fact, we noticed an increase in calls to the crisis line nationwide after both deaths.
And what programs would you have, or what programs might you have for friends and family members who've experienced witnessing the suicide of a loved one?
We have what we call survivors of suicide. And that's the term that we use within suicide prevention to talk about people that have lost loved ones, family members, friends to suicide. And we offer a group. It's done in generally in group, but you can also seek face-to-face counseling, grief counseling for that. Our agency provides both of those. It's usually a closed group. And what that means is you start and you end with the same people, and it deals with the loss of the loved one. And it's very beneficial to people who have lost loved ones to suicide. And then, of course, they can also seek face-to-face counseling. The grief process when you lose someone to suicide is quite a bit different than when you lose someone that you would expect to die. It's a more what we call a traumatic death. And so it can take a long time to get better. And most people really find going to a survivors of suicide group very, very helpful.
And what is it that you think people should know but don't when it comes to suicide or suicide prevention?
Well, I think the most important thing when I speak to the community is that suicide prevention can only go so far if the community is not there to support the person that's at risk. And I've heard so many times from people that have attempted suicide that I wouldn't have attempted if I had known anybody cared for me. I didn't think anyone cared. And so it's the idea that we need to connect more. We're becoming a very isolated society because of technology in many, many ways. And I think that's playing over into our lives. And it's great to be able to Skype with people that are thousands of miles away, or to be able to, you know, communicate with them in an instant. That's all great, but we still need to have that connection with someone else. And we need to have human connection. And I think that's the thing that I would tell everybody is be the one to make the connection. Be the one to say, are you okay? You don't even have to ask, are you suicidal? Just, are you okay? You look upset. Is there anything I can do for you? Just connect. Connect better. And I think that will go a long way. Know the signs. Know what to look for. Go on the internet. There's programs that you can take on the internet. You can do trainings like mental health first aid to learn about mental health issues and to learn about suicide specifically, and learn how to help those around us. And I think if we work together, if we really concentrate and work together, we can reduce suicide rates.
And is there anything else you'd like to add?
I do have one more thing that I'd like to say about suicide. And we talk a lot, you know, about asking questions about suicide and plans and all of that. And the one thing I would like to say is this is a wonderful quote from Craig Miller, and he's a suicide attempt survivor. And he says, "I can't tell you how many times I was asked the question, do I want to die? But no one ever once asked if I wanted to live." And I think that's a really important thing for us to remember. I remember Kevin Hines, he's one of the folks that have survived the jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. One of the things that he said was that if he died that day, no one would have ever known that he really didn't want to die, but he didn't feel like he had any place else to go. He didn't have anyone there to support him. And so I think that being able to remind people that they do have reasons to live and that there are people out there that care about them makes such a big difference in someone who is suicidal in their life.
Well, thank you so much, Christina Rita, for speaking with me today.
Sure. It's my pleasure.
That was Christina Rita, Community Education Program Coordinator with Crisis Support Services of Alameda County, speaking about suicide prevention. Again, the National Suicide Crisis number is 800-273-8255, and the local number is 800-309-2131.